All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you, he's your buddy, he loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work. And he watches practice. He takes pride in getting the story correct. And he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Thursday, May 3rd on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Live today, Ira, at One Buck Palace. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is with us. And, of course, the sage, the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, sporting his Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Brandon gear, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you today?
Doing well, doing well. You know, every time I bring up sage to my wife, Lee, she gets that look in her face like, calm down, calm down. You ain't no sage. Take the dog out, take the garbage out. Without her, you know, I got to have her around me to keep me grounded. And some of the guys that I play tennis with, I said, from now on, you'll call me Sage from here on out. One guy hit me with the ball. The other guy hit me with the racket. You got to keep a little perspective over here. I appreciate the sobriquet. I believe that's the word.
Oh! Got to look that up. That's how good that is.
This bit's bestowed upon me. I didn't ask for it.
Say that again.
I think it's sobriquet.
Sobriquet.
S-O-B-R-I-Q-U-E-T.
I don't know
where I came up with that.
That's,
you know,
the first word you've ever dropped that I have to look up.
Now, Steve, I want you to know that you are looking at a guy in sixth grade, PS 131 in Brooklyn.
Welcome back, Cotter.
Is this the spelling?
No. That's New Utrecht High School.
Is this the spelling bee story?
This is the spelling bee story that I got knocked out in the semifinal round on the word raisin. I got raisin wrong, Lee. So here I am with sobriquet. You may continue.
Yeah, that is a famous story from last summer.
Raisin.
A lot of hashtag raisins went around.
That's a true story.
Things slow down a bit in the summer and we have a little bit more fun. We'll get you to reset that because it's a classic.
You know, Lee, if you get tripped up on xylophone, you know, when you're 10 years old, then you can live with that.
Raisin. I was in the third grade,
you know,
right?
And I love raisinettes. You go to the movies, you get raisinettes, you know, you get bonbons and raisinettes. Oh, man.
I think I was in the third grade, maybe second grade, when I shocked the classroom in a spelling bee that I got Christopher Columbus right.
Ooh, very nice.
But that was a tough one. I vividly remember that was a tough one.
Then you got Mrs. Jones wrong.
Well, yeah, you're pretty much. When you brought up your wife and Sage, I thought she was going to have a comeback. Like, what do I need to add more to the sausage for?
You know, you got to calm down with this Sage stuff over there, Steve. I love it, but when I get home, I can't be the Sage.
Well, it's a little strange that you're discussing your sageness with your wife. You know, I don't think she's listening to the podcast, but we don't have to go there.
Here's something for you,
she
Sage.
She brings up all my inadequacies, you know, from the kitchen to the bedroom. All of them. Nothing is spared.
Here's something for you, Sage.
Yes,
I have to give you props yesterday for tweeting out about Alice Cooper and giving him props.
Alice Cooper. You know exactly who I was talking about.
No,
that's
I don't.
Not Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
You don't know who I'm talking about?
I have no idea. I figured Alice Cooper because Alice Cooper was on Broadway.
No, and of course Steve doesn't even know the
what
tweet.
What was the tweet?
The tweet was, on this date in 1972, a scruffy singer auditioned for John Hammond, you know, executive of Columbia Records.
Which everybody knows.
And Hammond said the kid had some potential. And then I said,
well, yeah. I'm assuming if it's...
And I said, now this kid has his own show on Broadway, and DeKemper thinks it's Alice Cooper.
Yeah, it's obviously Springsteen.
It's obviously Springsteen.
I had to do some research, and I'm like, who is he talking about? I started Googling, like, that's Alice Cooper.
Bruce on Broadway. You can't get a ticket. Cannot get a ticket.
I think Cooper was already well-established in the 60s, I would think.
Yeah, he might have had... Well, he didn't have schools out yet, but... Bruce on Broadway, Lee. Now, come on.
Well, Alice Cooper did, Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway.
I understand.
All right, Ira. Of course, your podcast presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. All the great May offers, they're just about to pop. They're being cooked right now. But you want to go to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Start your car shopping search there. And Ira, outside of the magic of Cadillac leases and all the great opportunities, of course, you can go to either Cadillac dealership, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, and enjoy their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. There's so usually special financing. It's fantastic. A pre-owned Cadillac, certified, warranted, top shelf.
There's a rumor out there that you and I might be making a little visit to some of these dealers.
It's not a rumor, Ira. We've been there before, and now we're waiting on you. We need a little info from you, Ira, to nail this thing down. Hopefully, by July 4th, you'll be rocking the flag, parading all up and down with your new Cadillac. But we're excited for that. And we're also excited, Ira, to be here at One Buck Palace. That they gave us a table and chairs this time. This
beautiful.
Is
beautiful.
Usually we're just, we're sitting.
You got your hot chocolate. The Kemper's got his coffee. What do I got? I got nothing.
I got here early this morning. They're actually cleaning the soda machine. I thought that thing never got cleaned, and it's actually being scoured. So that's fantastic. News of the day. Now, first, in this podcast, we left some stuff on the draft on the table. If you didn't listen to last podcast, go back to iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. You can subscribe or listen there or see it on joebucksfan.com. But we didn't hit every draft pick.
We left out some of Light's handiwork. That's what you're telling me.
We're going to dive into what we didn't get to in the draft a little bit later in the podcast. But some news of the day. Jason Light, general manager, was on local radio yesterday, Wednesday, and he had a lot to say, even though he didn't have too much to say. But there was some nuggets there. Number one, Ira, we'll get your take. We'll go in order. J.R. Sweezy, Light's asked about him. Sweezy's been rehabbing this mysterious leg-foot injury, ankle area, since December. Light acknowledges he's not ready. He might not be available. They're hoping for training camp. And then Light goes on to say that they'll have some tough decisions to make because they got a lot of bodies at offensive line.
You know, Lee, I was just talking about Bruce Springsteen, and now he's asking me about J.R. Sweezy. From the boss, we go to the mistake. And it looks like J.R. Sweezy was a mistake. It's beginning to look that way. If the three of us had to bet week one in New Orleans, J.R. Sweezy's not starting at right guard. If the three of us had to
bet that, yeah.
He's not starting at right guard, whether he's healthy or not, Steve. It's got nothing to do with his foot. We might see Evan Smith. We might see Benenock. I don't think we'll see Kappa week one. I don't. That's too big a leap too quickly. This is not Ali Marpet we're talking about. But Kappa's got a shot down the line. I think they like him, and they like his physicality. As far as Sweezy's concerned, Steve, here's my point. Yes, he's injury prone. Yes, he seems to be brittle. But God damn it, I'll say it right now. He was healthy last year, and he impressed nobody. He impressed nobody. He didn't impress any Buck fans. The offensive line as a whole, I know you're about to tell me what was fine, it was good, it was
okay.
A chart here, a chart there, analytic here, analytic there. I go by the eye, I go by the eye look.
So do I. But
in that Hall of Fame room, everybody says, I'm going by the eye test. That guy's not a Hall of Famer. I'm going by the eye test. That guy is a Hall of Famer. Well, I'm going by the eye test. He's not a starter, Sweezy. Unless he gets his act together and certainly, suddenly resurrects himself. So, Lee, from what I can gather from Jason Light's comments, this guy may not even be on the team in September.
Oh, he's toast. He's done. Now, I won't go as far as you are. I didn't think he was horrible. He's better than Evan Smith. I'm not.
He was undistinguished. Undistinguished.
That's a fair word, yeah. And I'll go so far as to say I don't think he's the same player after this back surgery he had.
And we're not surprised at that.
Well, I am because, I don't have a crystal ball about injuries.
But didn't you used to say how many offensive linemen can you name that had back surgery? And
that's Steve's research.
Yeah,
so
you guys
far
said
correct.
That.
So far, Steve's correct. It's one thing to miss an entire season, and then this crops up, and he's still hurt. You got to move on. You can't depend on a guy, and that's not a knock on him. He just, for whatever reason, since the Bucs drafted him, he can't stay healthy. And as Bill Parcells famously said, guy you covered, guy you know much better than Steve and I, your best dependability is availability.
No question about it. And that's one of, Donovan Smith's strong points, availability. Steve, this leads me to one more. I'm not going to mention
No, your
this.
Best ability. That's it. Your best ability is your availability.
Steve, this is the last podcast I'm going to dwell on this, but I'm going to say it again. With all these Buck fans going crazy, Light's a genius. He moved back five spots. He got the second rounders. And I agree that the way that the draft fell, Light did the right thing. I'm not going to argue that. Mm-hmm. He did a smart thing. He did a good thing. What I am going to say is, I keep going, and I think we're going to look back at it, and we're going to say it. The darn Indianapolis Colts gave the Bucs a gut punch. It was a gut punch at number six, especially after Denzel Ward went off the board in four, and people were going crazy. We're going to get one of the best three and this and that. And the Colts, smartly, to their credit, were not going to deviate from Quentin Nelson. They were not going to move off Quentin Nelson. You don't think Buffalo called Indy at number six?
They did.
They weren't going to budge. And they could have got a nice package from Buffalo. Maybe not what Light got. Maybe more than Light got. Maybe the same. They weren't going to budge. And what I'm saying is, if they had taken that deal and Buffalo takes the quarterback at six, and there's Nelson at seven, number one, in my opinion, Jason Light was not trading back to 12 with Nelson on the board.
No.
Was not. Number two, Jason Light was going to hand that card in 3 seconds with Nelson's name on it. And number three, tie all the dots together. Nelson's at left guard, Marpet's at right guard, Jensen's in the middle, and we're not having this discussion about Sweezy because Sweezy is irrelevant. But it didn't happen.
I've been saying that since the combine, but on this podcast, I've been saying it since I returned from the combine, that my everything pointed toward those guys getting Nelson if he was on the board. Everything. The body language, the read between the lines, you name it. The instability and uncertainty of Sweezy, everything, all signs pointed to Nelson. And I'll say it now, and I said it many times. I believe had he been there, the Bucs would have drafted him. And Light basically confirmed that this week. I wouldn't have, but Light confirmed. But yeah, he was sold on Nelson. And everything at the combine, from what Cutter said behind curtained off area for the private media, and which I was thankfully included, and what Light said publicly, and the body language, everything.
We can't cry about spilt milk. It didn't happen. He didn't have a shot at Nelson. He didn't have it, Light, so you can't blame Light on that. But, Steve, to say that the draft fell in absolutely the Bucs' favor, everything fell into place, that's not true. That's just not true. They could have had Nelson, and they still could have had Jones in the second round. I understand they wouldn't have had those extra picks, but they would have had Nelson. And you got fresh information. I didn't even know it. But you say Light basically confirmed that they were in love with Nelson.
Well, he said on radio, he was asked about, Nelson was a guy you coveted at number six. What was your reaction when he was gone at number six? And Light acknowledged on radio yesterday, yes, he was a guy that they coveted. And then he said, well, we coveted Vita Vea too. And that was his next response, and talked about as soon as that deal was made, my first reaction was, wait for the call from Buffalo. That was what Light said.
That's right. Obviously, they planned for the scenario that they're not going to get one of the big three.
Right.
I thought
it was a neat little nuance that Light didn't say, get on the horn to Buffalo. He said, wait for the phone call from Buffalo.
What I thought was fascinating. This backroom stuff is fascinating to me. That Ryan Pace on Chicago, on WGN podcast. It wasn't on the air, but it was on a WGN podcast. Ryan Pace, Bears general manager, said he was literally on the phone with Light when Buffalo called. Now, I wonder, given the fact that Lynch fleeced Ryan Pace last year, what were they offering? We'll never know.
You wonder what the Bears wanted at number seven. I mean,
but Pace said, and I quoted him in the story, he was on the phone with Light when Buffalo called, and Light said, hey, Buffalo's jumping up.
I wonder if Pace was ever on the phone with the Colts at six to try to jump up to get Nelson. We'll never know.
Well, we don't know what the Bears even wanted.
He did touch upon that, but I didn't take any notes because I didn't care, because it's the Bears.
Right.
But he admitted there were two players he wanted. One was Nelson. The second was Roquan Smith. Obviously got Roquan Smith. But those were the two players he was targeting.
Okay.
So now what he was offering White and hoping maybe Nelson was there, maybe, or if he... I say the link is on JoeBucksFan.com, and the story I wrote, the headline was, what were the Bears offering, or something of that nature, is a question mark. In that story is a link to the interview that Pace did. And he did talk about he wanted Nelson, but I didn't really care because it's the Bears.
What's always interesting to me on these things is, so the Bears GM calls Light. And you would think, right, if you take the numbers and the draft, mock draft obsessions that we all have out of this, say, hey, Jason, let's say they wanted Roquan Smith.
So want to move up one spot.
You would think the question is, Jason, are you going to draft Roquan Smith? Right? That's probably the first question. If Light says, well, I'm no.
Light probably says, probably not.
Does he say, I'm thinking about it? Or is the first question, can you keep me on hold here in case you get another deal? Because I hear, or is... you know, insert a team. Is Miami calling up to draft Roquan Smith? What are they offering? So Light's got to decide right there. Am I going to lie to these guys who I got to work with again and BS them to try to get a deal? Or am I going to play it straight? What am I going to do? You know, because I think the Bears' biggest fear is who else is jumping to get our guy? And so they're looking for intel. And does Light tell the truth? Or does he, you know,
fib
and play games? I don't know. I don't know how that goes down when you're on the clock and all of a sudden you got a big board in your room and it says 6 minutes and 2 seconds.
That's true.
You're right. I don't think the Bears' fear necessarily was the Bucks taking Roquan Smith at 7. It was another team making a deal with Light.
Right.
Not the Bills, because they wanted a quarterback. Not the Bills,
Miami,
but another
maybe.
Team.
Miami. Maybe.
And so the Bears. But Light. The Bears were not going to give the Bucks a package like Light got from the Bills.
Probably
so
not.
Light did the right thing.
Now, Ryan Pace did admit when Light told him Buffalo's going to jump up, Pace said, he goes, I knew I was out of it. I knew I had no shot to move up.
Buffalo had more.
Because Buffalo had more ammo.
They more had more ammo.
Yeah, much more ammo. So just to go back real quickly, Ira, just because I saw your face cringe before, and I didn't even give the exact specifics. So this time I will read the exact quote. As I head backwards here on my trusty computer, here we go. So this is Jason Light speaking about J.R. Sweezy.
On local Tampa
on local radio. Here we go. J.R.'s rehabbing right now, and we're going to see how that goes. You know, he hasn't been cleared, and hopefully he gets cleared by training camp. And, you know, we will see how it goes then. You know, you can't have enough offensive linemen, in my opinion. Right now, it looks like we're getting to the point where we have, you know, a few extras that we can make some decisions then, some tough decisions, but some good decisions. I mean, come on. That's not – we can't wait for JR to get on the field.
That's not a ring endorsement, Lee. I still got some questions about this offensive line, Steve. I'm sorry. I just do.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Alex Kappa. But before we get there, Ira, want to mention fanretreat.com. This is your place to buy all your event tickets. I don't want people to get confused that they just put together fan trips. Fanretreat.com, that's where you get your event tickets, your concerts, your Lightning tickets, your Buccaneers tickets. Loads of Bucks tickets on the secondary market right there, right now. You know, if you don't want to buy season tickets and you realize that, hey, these premium-priced games by the Bucks, extraordinary pricing on the Steelers and the Eagles game, you want to get in, go to fanretreat.com, look at their ticket inventory now. You can use your Joe Bucks fan discount code. Same thing for Lightning tickets. Big games coming up next week. So head there and you can get all your flights, your hotel, fanretreat.com.
One-stop shop, Steve. One-stop.
One-stop shop. Rented cars, everything in one pop. Now, if you want to go to the Bucks game, opening day in New Orleans with Ira Kaufman, with the commish, with the stick carriers, with a party that's going to be huge, then you want to text TAKEOVER right now, TAKEOVER to 345-345. All that's going to do is get you the information you need as it comes down from fanretreat.com so you can be part of this great trip and get in on it without waiting too long. Text TAKEOVER to 345-345. How about that, Ira?
I can't wait. I mean, I just can't wait. And let's hope Mother Nature cooperates, Lee. Now, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but New Orleans isn't exactly out of the hurricane cones. You know what I'm saying?
Hurricane Alley.
And that's peak, the second week of September happens to be peak hurricane.
Yeah,
season.
That's it.
It is. It is peak hurricane.
I can already see it now. I'm not going to be filing my column. We're in Mississippi. I don't know where the
I'm
hell.
I'm getting the hell out of here.
Well,
Steve.
Just to put some frosting on top of this crap sandwich you're throwing out there. If you have to be stuck in any city, when a hurricane hits, you want to be stuck in New Orleans.
So we bunkered down at Harris Casino, right?
I would say Brennan's. I would say the gumbo shop. There's all sorts of places.
Just get above sea level, Ira. It's a good day.
You know,
my
wife got a bad oyster about 4 or 5 years ago. It was the year that Sapp got into the hall. The Super Bowl was in New Orleans.
Oh, that's right.
I believe it was 2013, and it was the day after the Super Bowl. It was Monday. And we had a late flight Monday night, so we went to, it wasn't Acme, but it was the place across the street. She got a bad oyster. You get a bad oyster,
serious.
It's a problem. It's serious.
Was she hospitalized for that?
She went running to the bathroom.
Yeah.
She was in there a long time. I got concerned. And the publisher of the Trib was sitting at the bar. Yeah, the publisher of the defunct Trib was sitting at the bar buying us nice umbrella drinks over there, and Mai Tais, And anyway, she went in there. When she came out, she was dazed and confused. And I said, what the heck's going on in there? She said, I was on the grimy floor.
Oh.
Grimy floor.
Oh, New Orleans is a filthy city.
And if you go on that grimy floor voluntarily, you're in bad shape.
Well, can I say this? Maybe this will put a positive spin on things. Oysters are known to be aphrodisiacs.
I think you should stop right there, DeKemper, because we're not going to tell what happened the rest of that afternoon. But her stomach was upset, so there was no chicanery.
All right.
Where are you going to follow that up over there?
I don't know. Where do I go? Oh, speaking of chicanery.
Yeah, where do you go?
Speaking of chicanery, Ira. DeMar Dotson, okay, we sat down with him. He was cleared for duty. Said he could play in a game immediately. This was in February.
We got more segments with Dotson coming up, right?
Yeah, this summer, two good segments. And then we have Dotson having meniscus surgery, according to Ian Rappaport, who seems to know everything. And... and then Jason Light, after he was asked on radio about Sweezy, he was asked, next question was about Dotson. And all of a sudden, he lights up like a kid who just, found out that Christmas is tomorrow, not in 4 months.
I thought he's very vague, like, talking about injuries. Not when he's talking about Dotson.
Not about Dotson.
What did he say?
He says that, quote, he's on track. They fully expect him for the start of training camp, and it's all good. DeMar Dotson, you're starting right tackle. He didn't say you're starting right tackle, but he basically said he's doing great. He's on track at this point, and we expect him to be back for training camp. That's a big different song when you compared it to the Sweezy song.
So, boy, but one's a funeral dirge, and another's like a nice little pop song should be sung by Cyndi Lauper or something over there.
But that's great news. That's great news, but it's interesting news because, look, Dotson, they're going to baby him through training camp because he's going to be 33 years old.
When he played last year?
He was good.
He was good.
Right,
was
but good. This is what makes it interesting because he missed 18 games over the last 3 years. You have to, unless you're brain dead, you have to expect him to miss time this year.
Longest tenured Buckley. Longest tenured Buckley.
This goes back to your offensive line qualms, for lack of a better word. The last 3 years, and I know Sweezy was in Seattle 3 years ago. Last 3 years, the right side of the Bucks offensive line, right guard, right tackle, Sweezy, Dotson, missed 37 games.
That's way too many.
Yeah.
And Dotson's not getting any younger, to be fair, Steve. I mean, he joined the team in 09. I don't think he played in 09. I think he missed the whole year. But, 09. I mean, he's coming on 10 years.
Yeah, it's fine. My point is he'll expect him to miss at least a few games. So who's your number two right tackle? How do they handle that? So we got Benenock. And then last podcast, Ira, very interesting. Last podcast, Tuesday. Again, if you didn't listen to it, it's right there for you to listen to. Catch up. Great sage wisdom.
Over an hour, too.
Leave a review. Leave a comment or two.
An hour well invested.
Well invested.
Ira, you said that Alex Kappa, the late third round pick out of Humboldt State, you're like, this guy's a tackle. And admittedly, he has the body of a tackle.
The draft was over for 2 days, and I'm already projecting the man.
Now, after the draft, Jason Light came up, hit the podium, and said that Kappa would be a guard, but they saw him as a guy who could eventually play all five positions. Well, on the radio yesterday, Light says, specifically, Kappa's going to be working at guard and right tackle. Your thoughts?
Here we go again, Lee. Musical chairs on the Buck offensive line. You didn't have to be a sage to project that Kappa, his eventual, spot is going to be right tackle. He's physical. Dotson's breaking down. We don't know about Benenock. We don't know if Benenock's a guard. Is he a tackle? Is he a player? They like Kappa. Now, just to project him, as a right tackle in the professional level, he's got to work on a lot of things. Footwork, not where it should be. We know his disposition is nasty. We like that. They don't have to change that one bit. But his technique, Steve, his technique, who is he playing against? Humboldt State. I believe.
Bunch of tomato cans.
Steve, I believe Cutter even alluded to that. I think it was Friday night or Saturday.
Yeah, you have to be honest, yeah.
And he used to scout. He used to go to Humboldt State.
Yeah, they're in the same conference as San Francisco State where Cutter coached.
He used to drive over.
With Andy Reid.
Yeah, with Andy Reid and.
It's out in the middle of nowhere.
I think even Cutter said, the quality of the competition is a question mark, no question. But you could have said the same thing about Hobart. And here's Marpet. And maybe, can I throw this up one more time? I know we got a whole summer to talk about it, but the Kemper, maybe you got an answer. I'm ready to hear it. Why is Marpetta left guard? Why? Can I have an answer?
I don't disagree.
Can I get an answer?
You're not getting an answer, Ira. Stop asking the question. No answers for you. But when I first heard Light say this about the right tackle, my thought was, you know, the poor kid's coming out of Division II, and now he's got to learn two positions in the NFL level. It's like they don't want to let these guys just sort of groove into one spot. Now, they let Marpet.
Now, Kappa played tackle in college. He played tackle.
Sure.
Played guard.
So did Ali Marpet. They let him just go into right guard with the Bucs and ease in there. Now they got Kappa going to two positions. I get it. Once you're in the NFL, it doesn't matter where you went to college. But I felt a little bad for the kid.
They love that versatility.
Cutter, certainly.
Love the versatility. But to me, Kappa project. How many 6'7 guards do you know, Lee? That's highly unusual.
Oh, yeah. Now, a couple things here. I'll save the Ali Marpet comparison for a moment. You know, Jason Light was offensive lineman in Nebraska, which at the time with Tom Osborne was a factory for offensive linemen. Everywhere Cutter has been, Patriots is a big one. I don't know where I don't know where Light got this offensive lineman are interchangeable, like plug and play. I don't know where he got that from. I know Cutter believes in that.
Well, he's just thinking about Mankins. Guard, tackle, Mankins.
Mankins was mostly a guard, though, wasn't he?
You know, he was, but played both.
Did he?
Played
okay, both. Maybe that's where he got it from. Now, the comparisons to Ali Marpet, I think, are a little too quick, almost knee-jerk. When Marpet played, first off, Marpet was known to have good technique. I have not read that about Kappa. The only thing I read about Kappa, he's violent. Well, you know, you hiring an MMA fighter or are you getting an offensive lineman?
Yeah.
Now, Marpet, when he was at the Senior Bowl, fared very well going against his peers, some of the best in college football. He did very well. And, of course, the first pads practice with the Bucks, he handled himself very well against Gerald McCoy.
The Senior Bowl probably solidified his pick as a
yes,
Buck.
Yes. Now, at the Senior Bowl, Kappa did not distinguish himself. So we need to tap the brakes, you know, Ali Marpet did their Division III, so Kappa, Division II, he could do it too.
If Kappa's the right tackle at any you know, part of the 2018 season, that's a bad sign, I think. I'm not saying down the line.
Probably.
I'm saying 2018.
I mean, give the kid a chance to develop. Late third round pick, you know, that's just the way it is.
Let him play behind Dotson and get some, you know, second team reps.
One thing about Kappa that I thought was interesting is that he was in his conference – four-time conference lineman of the year.
Nice.
And four-time that pulled it up before. I know it's not here. Something like that. 4 years in a row. So you would think, well, after 2 years, he would have had some Division I offers at his height.
To transfer,
but he didn't. It's one thing I want to ask him about. It's like, well, you know, lineman of the year, he wasn't some late bloomer in college. He was dominant in Division II for a couple of years. You would think somebody, Division I, would have taken a flyer on him. But
hey,
we don't know what
I can't knock the Bucks for taking a guy who projects to me as a right tackle. I think that's the right move. I wasn't going to take him in the first round, but I think it's a smart move. I think I said they should have taken a right tackle in the 2017 draft.
I'm going to ask you something here, Ira. I just crossed my mind. You had irritable bowel syndrome for about a year because they moved Marpet to center. The weekend Marpet was drafted, Jason Light said, we project him as a center. And that drove you bananas for the past year. So if Light predicted Marpet to be a center, and you right away you said, don't do it, it's going to be a failure, and now that he's moved back to left guard, you're marching through the streets.
Now I'm upset about left guard.
You know, so if Light says Cap projects as a right tackle when he was wrong about Marpet, why are you swallowing that?
He fits the dimensions of right tackle.
Yeah, I know the measurements, but I mean, are you comfortable after Light 3 years ago was confident that Marpet was a center? And
well, you don't think Light would fib to the media, do you? You certainly would not do that deliberately, right, Jason? You would never do that. Look, I got Kappa as a right tackle. You can talk about guard all you want. He's going to play right tackle. You know,
he's going to play where he plays. And you know what? And let's go back. This sort of divides the argument that was almost boiling there between you and Lee. If he comes in this year and plays right guard, and he plays well, don't move him.
Thank you.
All the pre-draft stuff then goes out the window. Here he is. He's a guard. He's good. Leave him there. So we'll see how he develops. But it's a nice little competition brewing there between Evan Smith, Beninock, and Kappa. We'll see. I think it's going to be Beninock. They'll throw him in there. He can run block. And if he can't pass block, they'll roll James out to the left.
You know, I'm curious to see if if Donovan Smith and Marpet will be one of the better left sides of an offensive line in the NFL. And if it is, that's where you're going to see Peyton Barber and Jones run most of their carries.
Well, here's something I just thought of. It's what Steve said. It you know, light bulb went in on my head. If Ben and Knox can't pass block, you're going to have Jameis roll left. What's Cutter hung up on with his running backs? Blocking. If Ben and Knox can't block, well, bye-bye Jones. He's not going to use Jones then.
Yeah.
So you're back to last year and praying. And Peyton Barber's another guy.
You might see Charles Sims over there. DeCamper, sorry.
I know. You're right.
Lee just spit up his coffee.
No. You're right. You're right. If Ben and Knox is playing right tackle and he struggles at pass blocking, which he did last year.
Right guard.
I'm sorry. If he's struggling, they're going to bring in a running back thing to block. Bye-bye Jones. Bye-bye Peyton Barber. Hello, one-dimensional offense again.
Well, it goes back to what you were saying, Ira, about how will they perform on the left side of that line, Smith and Marpet. If they play well, then there's the center always has to go one, usually shades one direction or the other. So in that situation, Jensen's going to help on the right guard, whether it's the rookie or Benenock.
You might have a two-tackle alignment.
He'll shade to the right and help out there. It's where you really run into a problem is when the center has to go both ways because both guards aren't too good, and we had too much of that last year going on, and a center who wasn't that good.
Well, Jensen doesn't have a learning curve at center like Marpet.
No, it's a big step up. And you know what? Team Glazer, when we sat with Joel Glazer, he specifically said in that interview, upgrades at two positions. Yeah, with Jensen and Marpet moving back. So there's a lot of upgrades on the line, a lot of happy times. All right, Ira, the news of the day, so that sort of wipes that out. We're going to be talking with some Buccaneers here later, so maybe something will come up. But too bad, you get the podcast now when you get it. And Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ira, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, these are your only Hillsborough County Cadillac dealerships, 70-plus years, family-owned Ed Morse. You know, that's where I got my Ford. You make fun of my Ford sometimes out there in the parking lot. Beautiful car that
Yeah, look at him. He's running around on his Cadillac, and he's mocking your Ford. Snob.
It's my second vehicle I bought at Ed Morse dealerships locally.
Ira nods.
We go from question marks on the offensive line to sure things in the automobile industry.
There you go, Ira. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.com, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.com. So go back to the draft, Ira. The draft. We didn't hit on all the picks.
Did the Bucs hit on all the picks? That's the question.
Of course not, because they all bust out. You know, 40-50% of these guys, 60 are going to bust.
And nobody should pick on the Bucs if that happens.
Yeah, well, you know they will.
It just happens.
And the Bucs shouldn't pick on us for when we decide which guy stinks, right? Because at least three of them are going to stink.
On May 3rd. Exactly. You know, and we weigh in.
Right. Or September 3rd. So, fifth round. What do they do, Ira, in the fifth round? They go to wide receiver, a position clearly not of need. They go to the Ivy League for a guy with crazy measurables for the Ivy League, especially 4.4 time. He's big. Justin Watson.
Yeah.
What do you think of that as far as when they could have, in my mind, they could have taken a flyer on the next best available defensive end, but they go receiver.
I think that's another example, Lee. And I say this with some praise. I think it's another example of light sticking to his draft board. Mm-hmm. I think the kid was the highest rated guy left on the board. Certainly, wide receiver is not a position of need.
No,
I mean, they're four deep. That's not counting the two tight ends. Four deep at receiver. Humphreys is a pretty darn good number three or four receiver, and we know about Godwin coming on strong.
And Humphreys led all
And yes, Steve, DeSean Jackson is still on this team despite your efforts to get rid of him. He's still here.
Stop making
Now,
stuff
what
up.
Did you say last year about DeSean Jackson?
I said he won't be here in 2019. I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, not like Izbitz is really off the wall.
This kid did some really good things at Penn. He's got prototypical size.
Just to be clear, not Penn State.
Not Penn State. But my question, Lee, is, you know, can he stick around? Can he beat out Freddie Martino? Sure he can. Can he help on special teams? But anybody who thinks this kid's going to come in here and catch 35 balls and 5 touchdowns, that's not going to happen. He's just not going to get that kind of opportunity. Injuries happen,
yes.
Lee, but they are deep at wide receiver. Well,
the best comparison I read about Justin Watson is Jordy Nelson. That's interesting. Now, when he was first drafted, the first thing I thought of was Adam Humphreys. Part of that is maybe us being irresponsible. You know, White guy. I shouldn't do that. I apologize up front for doing that.
But he's a polished route runner.
Only reason I said Humphreys is, you know, Humphreys, again, he led the team in yak for receivers. Maybe that's what this guy is. As far as Freddie Martino, you know, our favorite lounge singer from the Vero Beach Ramada Inn, Velvet Lined. I was told this by an NFL general manager, and I am as guilty as anyone overlooking this. And it makes sense. When it comes to a guy like Martino, your fifth wide receiver, even your fourth wide receiver, essentially what I was told by an NFL general manager, if you're bottom of the roster wide receiver, it isn't about catching the ball. You better play special teams. If you don't play special teams, you're an endangered species.
No question about it.
And I was told that's why Lewis Murphy can't hang on to a job, because he doesn't play special teams. Tyquan Underwood was another guy. Doesn't play special teams. So if you're a bottom of the barrel on the roster receiver,
Shepherd did.
Yeah, so that will take a special teams guy. He may not be able to play wide receiver, but he can play special teams. And that's the key. And I always overlook that. I'm as guilty as anyone. Your bottom rung of wide receivers on the roster, it's not about receiving. It's about special teams.
Steven, if you can upgrade, even if it's at a fifth receiver, you do so. You upgrade.
We have to see the guy play. There's no evidence of everything I looked at. There's no evidence that he can play special teams in the NFL. He wasn't a special team. He was the number one receiver on his team. He wasn't cracking heads on special teams left
even
and right.
Even if he's on the practice squad, you know, I don't think DeSean Jackson is going to be here in 2019. Look, practice, so maybe he moves up.
Ira, practice squad means you were cut. Nobody else in the league wanted to throw a bunch of money at you. And, you know, they want him to make the roster, and he probably can. But we'll say it's a fifth-round pick. It's interesting that they went with that position where they're so deep, and they seem to like Martino.
He does. Yeah, they can't get rid of him.
He does seem to catch the ball when it's thrown his way, and they play special teams. So
I think this kid has a chance.
Yeah.
I think he's got a chance.
Yeah, well, they didn't think he had a chance. I don't think they drafted him. So.
Yeah, look,
they had bigger needs elsewhere.
Light went out and said himself that he was the sleeper, that he told Team Glazer in advance in their pre-draft meeting that this kid's one of his sleepers. So that, you know, makes...
And he could have took a kicker, Lee. Could have took a kicker. Oh!
Could have taken a kicker. And the Jordy Nelson comparison, actually...
Well, that's high cotton. Well, that
came from Watson himself. They asked him in the when he was picked, you know,
I'm surprised he didn't say Jerry Rice. He's going to say Jordy Nelson.
One of the media guys asked him here locally. We're sitting there, and he went the Jordy Nelson route, which I thought was pretty cool. It was fun.
Well, when Aaron Rodgers hears that, he's going to tell the Packers to go make a trade for this kid. I got to have this kid. He's still pissed off that Nelson's not on the team.
All right, as long as you brought that up, I don't know how closely you looked at it, but John Gruden, your friend, he's making some waves that, you know, he's already overhauling.
I don't like what I'm hearing. I don't like what I'm hearing out of Oakland. I just don't like it. What I'm hearing is he's solidifying his power. There's Bruce Allen rumors. Who knows if that's
all over the place.
All over the place. Might not happen this year. By the way, the Redskins are in trouble with the cheerleader thing. And
did you read that story?
Pretty bad. Pretty bad. You don't know if that reflects on Bruce Allen. But Bruce Allen has to be responsible for something.
He's
not responsible for the draft. He's got to be responsible for something. He's got to know what's going on in the organization. So back to Chucky. Lee, you're hearing things like Reggie McKenzie being pushed to the side. McKenzie's a pretty well-regarded executive. Before Gruden got there. Gruden's got the power, Lee. He's got the power, and he knows how to use it. It happened in Tampa in 2003. Here we go again. It's an old story. It's a broken record. And how did things turn out for Gruden once he ran McKay off and brought Bruce Allen in? Not very well.
Well,
I don't have any reason to think it's going to be any better in Oakland.
You heard, if you want to go on the record about this, go okay. But you told me some things that you'd heard through whispers, through back channels. Love the word back channels.
Back channels, love nice.
That Gruden did his best to run off McKay so he could pick his own lackey.
I don't think there's a lot of dispute about that.
And that was Bruce Allen. You wonder if that's the same things going on in Oakland, if he's trying to, you know, Pearl Harbor. McKenzie, it's very interesting.
He's feeling his oats, Steve. He's got the power.
Ira, all I'll say is about that whole stuff that's going on with Gruden, people not liking the picks and some bizarre things, and now running McKenzie out or wanting to overhaul. Why is anybody acting surprised? Everybody knew this was coming 4 months ago. So this is what Gruden, he's going to walk in. He'll look around. He'll wait
a month or two.
He'll feel it out. He'll get through the draft, then he'll blow everybody out and do his own thing. So this is no surprise, but everybody's, you know.
Didn't I say on this podcast when there was some talk that McKenzie had a chance to go to another organization, he didn't take it, I said, That's a bad move, McKenzie. Mm. You get the heck out of there before you're forced out of there. That was a mistake by McKenzie. Oh, I can work with John Gray. Well, you don't know what you're dealing with over here.
Because he's never dealt with him before.
He didn't know what he was dealing with.
You know that Washington Redskins thing? Did you read that story at all, Steve?
Yes.
The most disturbing thing, there were some ugly allegations. The absolute most disturbing thing I read was when they confiscated the passports. That's what pimps in Thailand do to get workers.
Oof.
They do. I mean, they get foreign girls to come in, all of a sudden they lift their passports. What are you going to do? You can't get out of the country. You're trapped.
And it was presented as like, this is an order. You have to do this.
Yeah.
I want
to make sure you don't lose your passports. I would have said, put me back on the plane. I'm out.
Steve's mad that he's not one of the hot shots that benefited from all
oh,
this.
Ira, don't be disgusting.
That he doesn't have him coming on his yacht.
Lee's the one who knows about Thai pimps. I don't know anything about these Thai pimps.
So I'm not liking what I'm hearing out of Oakland, by the way.
I've never been to Thailand. I've never been out of the country, by the way. So.
But if Doug Martin has a big year, you know, that's going to be a feather in Gruden's cap. We'll see.
All right, Ira, come on. Don't insult the people. Jack Sicci. Jack Sicci out of Wisconsin.
You can't even spell his name over there, Steven.
That's the pronunciation, Ira. Jack Sicci, Wisconsin, linebacker, sixth round, coming off an injury. What do you think?
You know what, Lee? Before the injury, he was pretty highly regarded. Yeah. I think that injury knocked him down a round or two.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, I wrote it was it's Kendall Beckwith II. Now, he wasn't as highly recommended and regarded as Beckwith, but similarly. Beckwith went down to the third round. Because he blew his knee out. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been there. Same thing with Sitch.
Made a heck of a recovery, Beckwith.
Unbelievable recovery. And you know, I got into it with someone on JoeBucksFan.com, one of our loyal and appreciated commenters. I'm not being sarcastic. He was like, well, how do you know Beckwith won't be back? I'm like, do you know the extent of Beckwith's injury? I do not. So until I see the guy on the field, all bets are off. He could have a shattered ankle for all we know.
You know, Steve, some people think the Bucks are crammed with tremendous depth at linebacker. I don't see that. I don't see that. I think they need another player back there, another guy that they can groom.
They got good depth, Ira. Come on, stop upsetting the Bucks fans.
Good depth. I mean, well, what kind of proven depth do they have? Proven. Devontae Bond is proven.
Devontae Bond is not bad at all. I'll give you. I may have mentioned a story before. I was talking with the Bucks defensive assistant at the East West Shrine practices in St. Pete back in January, and I was telling him, I said, man. This Bond, he really came on.
He's probably going to get his chance in training camp.
I told, especially with Beckwith being a question mark. And I told him, I said, Bond really impressed me. I love this fundamentals. I love this tackling. I said, this guy's coming on. And this assistant told me, he said, he'll be better next year. Right? And I immediately thought of, well, I hope so. He's going to have a year under his belt. But it was explained to me that last year, because the Bucks pass rush was just so horrid, they had Bond playing close to the line of scrimmage to get more pass rush, and he was technically playing out of position. So they said this year, with a better pass rush, they'll have him playing in position, so he will automatically be a better player.
You know what, Steve? This is not a defense that's known for its sure tackling and tackling technique. Bond really stands out in that area.
How far things have fallen, right, Ira?
I'm just saying, Ira. Right. I'm just saying that. What team has tremendous depth at linebacker? I mean, you know, you get the guys that are there. And Glanton, who changed his name to Taylor, he had shown that he can play.
And he returns.
And he's back. And, you know, Beckwith is going to come back. We'll see. Bond looks like an NFL player.
Bond's
going to
get his chance, Steve.
Yeah, and he got plenty of chances last year, too. So he's certainly not the problem. Linebacker depth is like last.
That's like tight end. That's no issue.
This rookie will have to be developed.
This guy's,
and it's up to the coaching staff to do it.
Yeah, this guy's interesting because he sat out all of 2017. So Beckwith at least played until November of his senior year. This guy sat out. He could have probably gotten an exemption to come back to college football this year, but he came out anyway and was still a sixth rounder.
And so you're not counting on him, Lee. You give him another year to recuperate.
Basically, the guy who has to worry is another Big Ten linebacker. That's Fabio.
Yeah, yes, I understand. A fan favorite.
Joe Dirt, a.k.a.
Fabio.
Riley Bulla.
A fan favorite.
Now, he's like you, Ira. He's got a lot of different names.
Did they call him the Sage?
No, they don't call him the Sage. All right, Sage. Any pearls of wisdom here that you want to share? Any Buck feelings or vibes or thoughts as we proceed toward next week, the end of next week's rookie mini camp and OTAs?
I want to bounce up. Now, I haven't heard you guys. The first question is, did you read my column the other day? I know you did, Steve. Lee might have glanced at it. But, Lee, tell me where I'm wrong. Instead of cringing about starting the season in the Superdome instead of cringing. What better proving ground can you have that this is a new Buck defense and a new Buck pass rush than beating up on Drew Brees? Can you ask for a better opportunity?
That's beating up on Drew Brees. That's high goal, man.
It's a high goal.
Yeah.
A lot of times, Steve, and we've said it in the press box, and the game ends, you know, and they're walking off the field, and I turn to Lee or Steve, and I go, Brees doesn't even have his hair mussed. He doesn't need a shower. We've talked about that kind of thing. Now, it didn't happen in Tampa 2 years ago when they beat him up pretty good. In that incredible, that was the last of the five-game winning streak. They beat him up pretty good. They roughed him up. He threw three picks, and the Saints didn't score a touchdown. You remember that game, Lee, was 16-11.
Sure.
It was during the five-game winning streak.
Okay, I was thinking of the Jameis' first road game.
That was the game that pushed the Bucs to 8-5.
Yeah, okay.
And the future seemed very bright. You needed shades, in the words of Chucky. But then they went down to New Orleans last year. And Brees strafed him.
Oh,
you know, a cool Brees. You know, was the pass rush.
Game was over with in the second.
So quarter. I want to see Pierre Paul. I want to see your
right, who's going to argue?
I want to see your number one pick.
Come on, what is this? You're asking us. Of course, it makes sense. You got to go there and show you got a pass rush. If not,
and what if they do? What if they do? Well, what if they win that game?
If they win that game, then everybody can take a deep breath. They're not going to go 0-3. The optimism will reign. They'll probably at least go 2-2, at least to get to the bye, and this will be a real football team for a change in October.
And we haven't seen 2-2 in September, Lee, in quite a while.
Oh, my gosh.
Quite a while.
Just think about that. 2-2.
2-2.
How things have changed. Now, here's one for you, Ira. Says, I know Steve wants to wrap this up, but want your input on this. Alex Marvez earlier this week on Sirius XM NFL Radio.
Sage NFL analyst. Okay. Sage.
Well plugged in. He was talking about the Bucs, you know, being so focused on signing defensive tackles. And, of course, they drafted Vita Vea. And everybody, I think, recognizes eventually Vita Vea will replace Gerald McCoy. Well, Marvez seems to be inclined to think that that might be a whole lot quicker than we realize. What I mean by that is Marvez said, look, the Bucs were the worst defense in the NFL, worst rushing team in the NFL. Gerald McCoy's getting paid $13 million, and I've always defended McCoy and still will. But Alex Marvez, his words, not mine, pretty soon Gerald McCoy's got to start playing like a $13 million player, or you could be last in rushing without him.
Look, this the subset of the season is it's a big referendum on McCoy, Steve, in this regard. We know he's been double-teamed. You know, six straight Pro Bowls, you're going to double-team him. When you look around, who's with them, you're going to double-team McCoy.
Of course.
I don't believe that that's the situation this fall. I don't believe it is. Pierre Paul, off McCoy's right shoulder, or playing left end, he's got to be accounted for. You leave one-on-one with Pierre Paul, you're asking for trouble. If V is in there, what does he do? He occupies blockers. You can't double-team everybody. Steve, you got Vinnie Curry, you got Boone Allen. You got some players. We didn't even mention Noah Spence. We don't even mention him. So this is a big referendum on McCoy, and you did your research, Steve. Well done, you gentlemen. You know, if the Bucs want to make a move a year from now on McCoy, they can do so with minimal financial ramifications.
No guaranteed money an issue. It's just a year-by-year thing because that's how it is. When you get toward the end of a big, fat contract, your guaranteed money's up. It's no surprise.
They go 6-10. With a healthy Gerald McCoy, that spells trouble for Gerald McCoy.
Always, Steve, and I always say this about Jameis, and I think you can include Gerald McCoy in this. Let's say, and I was going to say this earlier, I'll say it now. We don't know what this past draft's going to be for another 3 years. It could be a home run draft. Light may not even be here. If they, like you said, 6-10, I don't think it's a shock Light's not here. I don't think it's a shock Cutter's not here. Let's say the new regime comes in. When Steve and I always talk about this, new regime may not be sold on Jameis. Well, you know what? They may not be sold on Gerald McCoy either.
It's a big year for Jameis. A benchmark year for Jameis. Same thing for McCoy. Same thing for Cutter. Same thing for Light. If it doesn't go right, I wouldn't be surprised if they're all gone.
The difference between Winston McCoy the Bucs have already invested a lot of money in Gerald McCoy.
Yeah.
And Winston, they got a big decision coming up. A big, big decision. Right. $130 million decision. Big one.
Yeah, they got plenty of time, Ira. No rush. You know, that's why they have the franchise.
There's
tag.
No rush. What are you, an NFL investigator on the Uber case? What do you mean there's no rush?
All right.
Boom.
All right, Sage. We're going to go out of the podcast on a little trivia question. Then we can dive into this next week. I was looking some things up.
Oh, he's got trivia.
A little
over
trivia.
Here.
So let's see. You want to go against Lee or you want to go yourself?
I want to go against Lee.
You want to go against Lee?
It's more fun.
Ira's a competitor. Okay. Now,
my answer, without having heard the question, Rachel Watson.
All right. Here we go. In advance, we have to accept in advance, in order for this to be accurate or make sense, we have to accept that the last two good years running the football for the Buccaneers, that quality, excellent years running the football, were 2015 and 2012. Do you gentlemen accept that?
Agree.
Those were the Doug Martin years.
If we had that again this year, we'd love it. We'd go crazy. Okay. In 2015, where did the Buccaneers rank in time of possession in the NFL?
You got to sing that song, that Jeopardy thing.
Keep talking. So that's the 20th. Year. That's the year where Martin and Sims, more than 2,000 yards rushing.
They averaged 4.9 a carry.
Both of them, incredible.
4.8, I think. You say 20th?
Yeah. It smells like a trick question.
Yeah, it's a trick question. The answer should be 6th. It should be. But in Isbitz's evil mind, I'm going to say 14.
26th in the NFL, time of possession.
I read him right.
2012. 2012, where were they in 2012?
16th.
14th. I'm sticking with the number 14.
16th.
Not even
nice
looking up.
Nice.
All
right. Lovely.
Now let's go back to last one, and we'll dive into this a little deeper. There's more numbers here. And let's go to 2016, okay?
Couldn't run a lick.
Oof. Couldn't run a lick. 2.9, Mr. Martin. We know the story. Not enough with receivers options. 2016. Time of possession.
What year?
2016. 9-7.
Ninth.
11th.
Eighth.
The Kemper's killing me.
Get out of here, Sage.